group. That, what is it, National Association?
No.
No.
Hmm?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where did I see that group? Didn't start from the American Revolutionary Pamphlet, because that was only, what, 62 or 63.
Mm-hmm.
Around about 69, I wrote a pamphlet called Manifest for a Revolution in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
In that pamphlet, I summed up where I thought we was on the threshold of a revolution in the United States. And also why race. Did you have it?
Mm-hmm. Just put it on the
okay, the cell.
Mm-hmm. And the idea at that time was based on analysis of that there had been a terrific movement in the United States, you know, the civil rights movement. That movement was sprouting up everywhere in the United States. But they needed a more and different kind of organization so that they wouldn't just be spontaneous all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was putting forward the idea of having a strong cadre type organization,
mm-hmm.
in which all the peoples would be politically organized. And that they would be capable of giving leadership to a very serious struggle in the United States. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was around that pamphlet that some Philadelphia folks and myself and some people from Muskegon come together and form that organization. At the time of the formation of the organization, we called we were basing on a black revolution in the United States. We didn't say American revolution, we said a black revolution. But this paper was based on primarily what had happened to blacks, and blacks as a social force, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We formed the organization in 69. And it lasted up until 87,
mm-hmm.
which it grew at one time to be around about 10 or 11 organizations.
About what?
10, 11 organized groups.
Okay.
Seattle, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, Melbourne, and then Muskegon, Detroit, Philadelphia.
What kind of activities?
New York, New Jersey, Boston, and Syracuse, New York. Well, we had bankers in each one of those locales.
Mm-hmm.
We would have conventions on a national scale, decide what we were going to do as a national organization. And then we would have a convention on the local scale, decide what the local was
mm-hmm.
going to do in that geophysical area.
Mm-hmm.
So that went on. That was the way we organized ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In between that, we may have special meetings based on certain things which might have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
and if we might specifically alter some of the things we planned to do in order to follow that course. But most of all, our action would come from some kind of political evaluation or some kind of political analysis. Okay. We didn't do things just for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. And we tried to keep abreast of what was happening in the country politically. And we tried to keep abreast to what was the potential of social forces to move in a particular direction. Mm-hmm. Okay?
When Jim or Barbara call, find out what time they're going to be here. They're going to be here for dinner.
All right.
Not lunch.
All right.
And if Rick Robinson calls, please ask him
right.
where I could reach him this afternoon.
All right. Now you got your thing over, don't
you?
Yeah. Be careful now.
Bye bye. Thanks, Grace.
Now, you've been asking me some things now.
You know what I'm going to ask you?
What?
I'm going to ask you to do something that you already did the last time I was here.
Mm-hmm.
My tape recorder wasn't working very well,
mm-hmm.
and I missed a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very short on experiences of people when they just came to Detroit from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, if that's okay, can we go switch channels and go back, and can I ask you to tell me again how you know when you came up here from the South?
All right,
that's
no problem.
Would that be okay?
No problem at all.
All right, good.
I came here in 1937, and I came here on a freight train, as most people were doing during those years.
How old were you?
18 going on 19. See, I graduated from high school in Bessemer, Alabama.
In where?
In Bessemer, Alabama.
Okay.
In 1937. I had brothers and uncles and cousins here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the period when it was the Great Depression. And the way people were traveling most at that time, you were oboes.
Mm-hmm.
Just thousands of black and white and everything else. It was very tough, however, going out of the South at that time, primarily because they had the Scott boat case down south.
Right.
And that was a question of if they catch black and white and hope on together, they're just going to beat the hell out of the blacks. It was tough.
Mm.
But nevertheless, myself and one of my friends from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he's from my hometown, Marion Junction, Alabama, which is below 7. Him and I got on the freight train and hoboed up here.
What did you bring? How much did you bring? A suitcase?
No.
Or did you bring?
Have nothing
anything?
But what we had on our backs.
Really?
That's all.
Okay.
Didn't even have a chain a pair of clothes, which we learned how later after we opened some more that you always take along to sell the clothes.
Yeah.
We had nothing but what we had on our back. I had about 50%, he had about 50%.
Wow. How did you eat?
We ran out of money the second day.
How did you eat?
Bomb, like everybody else was doing.
You bomb off of?
Bomb up folks' house and had miss what you give them something to eat. And people would generally give you some bread and meat or whatever.
So you'd go to the nearest house and?
Yeah, and knock on the back door.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Foster, Ohio, I went over to a farmer's house and the lady gave us some cabbage and ham hocks. This was in the summer. Then in Cincinnati, we went down to the bakery big and they gave us some semolos and stuff. Cincinnati was a bomb town at that time. Bombs just about 100 laying around. Cincinnati had a garbage dump there. And people had built a shanty town there, on the river.
Oh.
Okay. So every day you go uptown and bump.
Hmm.
In fact, I had some guys living down on the river in Cincinnati at the dump that lived in Cincinnati. They were bumming, but they hung out with all the bums that come in from all over the country. Because people were just bumming like that, you see. And St. Louis was another town was like that. St. Louis, people took cross ties and made houses all down side of the Mississippi River. They even had houses.
Oh, my.
Made as bums. Everybody was bumming. So sometimes get on a freight train, there'd be 50 people on a freight train, scattered all over. Okay, some sitting on top, some inside, some in gun dodges, so you know, just riding where you can ride. And then the big thing you have to worry about is when they come into a town, when the freight trains slow down, everybody jump off and walk around the town to catch the train when they leave out on the other end of the town. Because if the police will stop, well, now it's down south of Tennessee, if they catch you, they put you on a peanut farm, pick peanuts. If you peas one. But if you got up in another place, they didn't want you at all. They just want you to get the hell out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because there's bombs, so many bombs. So that's the way I came here. Now, I got off at River Rouge out there. I rode the T and I. That's Detroit, Toledo, and Ireland train. That was a Ford train from Toledo. I rode it instead of riding the Michigan Central.
Mm-hmm.
Got off at Ford Rouge. And I walked down Michigan Avenue to the downtown Detroit. Asking the police in Dearborn and all down that road where was Theodore and Hastings. And nobody knows.
Is that where your relatives are?
That's where my uncle was living.
Theodore and Hastings.
So I come to 940 Theodore. Early day in June, 1937. Oh, this is the first time I'd ever been to a big city. I'd been to cities like in Alabama, but there wasn't nothing like Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So Detroit was the first big city I'd ever been to. My brothers was here, I had two brothers here.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle was here. My uncle was the first black person that worked in Bird Wheel over here on Charlotte. So all of us thought we was going to get a job over there. I don't know why we thought it, but we thought we would. We didn't get none. But, so that's the year I came to Detroit, 37. Boy, there's depression all over. So what you do, you get a job washing cars, like these bombs do now. They're like the same way day workers, anywhere you can get something. Oh, somebody pick you up, you go out in the country somewhere and work in cabins where the people have summer cabins. I had never heard about that before till I come here. You do a little painting with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Get about $3 for a room to paint in those days. I finally worked with some painter for a little while that summer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember all the different little jobs I got.
And you live with your brother?
Mm-hmm. But mainly, I went in Washington, car washing place.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, except blacks who worked at Ford, and a few worked in different foundries, wasn't many blacks working in the oil industry at all. Ford was the one where blacks worked in.
Mm-hmm.
The only place where blacks are not known. They worked in the foundry at Ford. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I had several cousins working at that Ford even at that time. They were big shots. Big shots because they were the only one that had a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And getting about $25 a week, $26 a week at that time was lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
Most people had them little $10, $11, $12 a week jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in that, now I was in the area of, from Hastings, from Midbury back down to Forest was the area I lived in during that period.
Okay.
All right? So, this was the period in which a lot of blacks was coming into Detroit from the South, primarily from Alabama. And the whites was coming in, was coming from Tennessee. Okay? And a few from Kentucky. Now, I did many whites from Alabama. Funny thing, whites didn't come from Alabama much up here. In fact, you know, I'm come till finally World War II. Lots of them come direct from World War II. Whites didn't leave from Alabama. They left from Tennessee, though, like May. Well, that's because Tennessee was a mountain type land, and you had a big farm there. In Alabama, you had plenty of big farms because the land was flat. Okay.
So whites did better in Alabama.
They did better in Alabama. Okay. But they left like mad Tennessee, because Tennessee didn't get as bad off as blacks were, okay? Now, so, okay, now, I don't want to dwell on that. Now, what else would you like to go to?
Okay, then, when did you get a job? You got a job at Ford, didn't you?
No, not then. No. I went and worked on WPA. Great Progress Administration, WPA. And I worked on Orange Lawn, Green Lawn, Cherry Lawn, Laurel, Southfield, State Street, all those streets, digging the curb stones for to put in, curbs and to put in cement streets, because both all the streets are dirt roads in them days. Now.
When did you get married?
I went back to South in 1938 and got married.
In 1938?
Uh-huh, all right. Come back and still was on WPA because there wasn't nothing there to do. Then I got transferred in WPA from WPA outdoors working to paint. And then I painted. Denver High School. Come and keep a hospital, but it's all under the WPA administration.
Okay.
Working with the city of Detroit. They line us all out to the city of Detroit. Then from there, I went to George Trade School. That was WPA too. But they was teaching people different trades, and I took up machine tools.
Oh, okay.
And they had instructors from Ford working down at George Trade School on Russell. I was on Russell Street. Right in there, near by the Mac Avenue, was a school called George Trade School.
Okay.
I went to George. Did 18 months in George Trade School. Temple pattern makers and all that stuff. Well, by that time, the war industry was starting. And I got called to Aeronautic Tube Company out on Ryan Road, but I wouldn't take it because I had got called crisis. So I never did get any work in my trade. And I got called to Chrysler, and I thought I'd made more money at Chrysler because they was going to give me 60 cents an hour as a temple maker, pattern maker at this here aircraft plant. But that was an apprentice program. Whereas at Chrysler, I got 68 cents an hour. Factory worker. Now, most factory workers in that day, tops, he was getting around about $1.10 an hour, skilled trade.
Okay.
I eventually got it worked up to 9/8 an hour at Chrysler. And then from 9/8 an hour to $1.02 an hour. I worked for $1.02 an hour from 1940. Till the war was over in 45. And the highest wages in Chrysler at that time was around about $1.36 an hour, and that was for a tool cutter, gear cutter, and machine shop. And the skilled trade workers getting about $1.42. So all of us got less than $2 an hour throughout the war. Worked lots of overtime. But you see, the cost of living was much cheaper. We had lots of money compared to speaking.
Yeah.
In tax. Everybody saved some money during the war. Lots more folks. That's how they bought all them houses when the war was over. Because people had 4 years there in which it just wrecked and wasn't nothing to buy. Oh. Didn't make no cars. There was nobody buy no new cars. Nobody bought a used one.
Okay.
And nobody bought refrigerators and stuff like that, or big heavy appliances. Nobody bought nothing but furniture, house furniture. And therefore, when the war was over, because they'd worked all them long hours, and they'd all accumulated a little money.
Mm-hmm.
Because I accumulated some, and I didn't have all that fancy job. But now that's during the war. The town was booming, and everybody was wet. Out around Chrysler there, at them old houses out there, used to rent out. They used to rent the house by shift, rent the room by shift. You slept in the bed at the morning shift, and somebody else slept in it that night while you was at work, or vice versa. Now, that was the flow of those people who would come in, because people just pouring in. And the air, you get a job anywhere you went to. Everybody would hire you. Okay, because it was getting cost plus. In other words, if Pfizer paid you $1 an hour, the government would get $1 to it. So they made $1 off of me every hour that I was getting paid. That's the war was doing. They had what they call a cost plus. Whatever it cost to come, plus. So therefore, the economy wanted to hire lots of folks, you know, anyway. You wasn't doing much work.
Yeah.
You hired.
Oh.
Because they're getting so much ahead for everyone to keep. In fact, it was hard to get fired in those days because the company wanted to keep you, okay? All right, so I worked throughout the war in motors at Chrysler. And when the war was over, 45, year day, we just went back, after a while, we went back to make the call, okay? All right, now. Any important thing you want to ask me? Now in 43 they had a big rebellion. All right, I was waiting for us then. That was during the war. And that's when they had the first big socialism. There was a lot of tension in there at that period because blacks were mushrooming out of the little small ghetto that they were in, from Brush Street over to Russell, from Midbury Street down to downtown, you know, Black Bottom now. So in 43 they had this hell of a rebellion. I was living on Palmer at that time, between Brush and Bowman. That is when 43 people got killed in that rebellion, all right? And that was when lots of the black troops was talking about they was going to come home and fight for at home rather than go to war. So that was a real hell of a upheaval here, okay?
Where were you?
Did
you get involved?
I was working at Chrysler. I didn't get to go to work in over a week, but I couldn't get away. People were fighting, pulling folks off streetcars. You went to the white neighborhood, the white would attack the blacks, and if you went to the black neighborhood, the black attacked the white. So, in my neighborhood was a lot of shooting. People would get bricks and get up on the roof and protect their buildings. Some of them had shotguns. And there was lots of killing. There was lots of looting in certain areas, but lots of areas there wasn't no looting at all. But there had been lots of shooting. And then for weeks and weeks after that, it was dangerous for a black person to call in the white neighborhood, or dangerous for a white person to call in the black neighborhood. So the blacks, the white bread man, or whatever they had in them days, a milkman, like they was afraid to come to the black neighborhood and vice versa, okay? And that's when they brought in fellow troops. Okay, so I was in that thing. Up there where I was lots of tension, lots of shooting, and lots of killing.
Did you get involved in any of these? When did you become an activist?
Well, see, I was active in the union.
Were you?
Front, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What
see,
did you?
I belonged to the goon squad at the front.
You belonged to the goon squad?
Yeah. I got an old shirt back there. Had flying. They call it flying squad.
Really?
Yeah. Our job was when there was a strike, or not when there was a strike, we was trying to make people join union.
Mm-hmm.
So our job was to force folks to join up to the union, threaten them and do different things.
To force them?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, look, more people join the union because we force them in the union, they join automatically.
Is that right?
Yeah, because they didn't want to pay no dues, so we tell them we got to pay. Every once in a while, we'd have a dues push.
Mm-hmm.
We'd line up out at the gate and wouldn't let them in unless they belonged to the union.
Oh.
So they go around the back and jump over the fence and go to work anyway. Then the next day or the next day or so, we go out to the house and throw a brick through there or beat the hell out of them and they join. Okay?
Mm.
So that was part of the organizing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we used to go out and help other local organizers. I helped Born and Loomer organize. And then finally the great strike at Fulton here right after the war. That was rough. We sent out flying squadron out there and we had to fight them old police in Dillon because the Dillon police force belongs to Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Plus Ford had his own police force.
Mm-hmm.
He had all them horses out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they would utilize the horses to ride around and knock the hell out of you with that long trench and stick they had. So I was very active in the union. In the period of when it was organized,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So I guess you would say I was in the old left wing group,
mm-hmm.
which was the Thomas Addis machine, R.J. Thomas and Addis. All right. We had come in after the old, what's the name of that preacher from Tennessee? He was the first guy we had. I can't think of his name.
The preacher from Tennessee?
Yeah, Homer Martin. Homer Martin was for the head of the union then. See, people had lots of preachers who were active people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but then at the convention, then I think in Milwaukee, the Thomas Addis machine, which was much more political than they were, took over.
It was George Addis, was it?
Yeah,
and
R.J. Thomas.
R.J. Thomas.
Yeah.
And who were they?
Well, R.J. Thomas was nothing but a weller over there on Chrysler, Country with Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all political activists because they belonged to lots of little political organizations that were around.
Mm-hmm.
Got to remember that was the FWP, Social Workers Party, Communist Party, Labor movement or whatever it was called. What's the name of the movement? Chapmanites, Olin Wrights, the Wobblers,
mm-hmm.
IWW. All them different groups were in the union. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there were three or four different political machines inside the union. Okay? Struggling for power in the union.
Mm.
And so you had lots of factions.
The union was divided.
In lots of factions.
Mm-hmm.
All struggling over who was going to give leadership. They weren't divided being anti-union versus pro-communist.
Mm-hmm.
They were divided on which direction should the union go. Some was a little more militant than the others.
Okay.
So Thomas Addis was a very militant group. We would strike all the time.
Okay.
In fact, prior to Ruther coming in, or even though the Ruther brothers was already in GM, they was both in GM. Prior to Ruther's taking over UA Derrick, we used to strike all the time. But when Ruther come in, he cut the strikes out. Most of them. See, we used to have wildcats, as they call
them.
Uh-huh. We sometimes had maybe 150 strikes in a year.
Oh my gosh.
Every time you didn't like something, we walk out. So we had that was that's where we forced the decision we wanted.
How did the name Wildcat strike?
Well, that's what a Wildcat is, the unauthorized.
Okay.
Wasn't authorized
and
by the union.
And
yeah, all right, we walk in this moment and say, oh, it's too hot in here. Let's get the hell out of here. It's too damn hot to walk. Everybody started walking out. We're going to walk out at 10, we walk out. Well, they come say we're going to fire some of these little calls, just walk out. So we say, if you fire them, there ain't nobody coming back. So it rang around there a couple of days, and then there we go back there. Guys get reinstated. And this will go on, next week or something.
Oh,
something else come up. Come try to fire somebody, we all walk out. Oh, they want to speed up the line. We walk out. Okay? And so we used to have Wildcats.
Wow.
I remember you had rubber down, you had 100. They had 156, they had the most of anybody. And Hudson plant down there on Jefferson, they had a lot of strikes. So that was during the period of what we call selling everything on the point of production. We were selling right then and there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the farmer says so and so, we said, no, we ain't gonna do so. And then they come and go up and get the superintendent come down and say, yeah, you got to do something. Well, we ain't doing it. We walking out and boom, we gone. All right? So that's during the period of, there's a padlock I got around here, graciously I signed for you, called the Wildcat and the Committee Man. Johnny Zupan wrote that pamphlet, because that was during the period of Wildcats.
Uh-huh.
I got a lot of stuff here.
I never knew what a wildcat strike was.
Yeah, well, a wildcat strike is an unauthorized strike where people just spontaneously walk out over bridge. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right, they want to take so many people off the line. You say, like, hell, they didn't take nobody off. We need some more.
How did wildcat strikes don't happen anymore, do they?
No, they outlawed wildcats.
They're illegal? They were illegal?
They made them illegal. For years, though. Wildcat. That was when the union was at its best.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there was pressure all the time.
Uh-huh.
But see, then once they got the check off, well, you had to be in the union whether you paid dues or whether you wanted to join or not,
mm-hmm.
which we fought for, it kind of was a bad thing at the end, because as long as everybody had to pay their dues each month themselves out of their pocket, they was always complaining.
Mm-hmm.
Once they got the check off where the union didn't have to do nothing and still going to get the dues, it changed the whole temper of the whole thing.
Okay.
Because guys, some of them, the partner said, look, we ain't pay no dues this month unless y'all get something did. That kept the union jumping like hell. You understand?
Uh-huh.
So once we got the check off, even though we fought for check off, but we wanted to get everybody, the idea of having check off was to have everybody to be in union. You had to be in union, remember, from the day you walked into the plant and got hired.
Mm-hmm. And you had a steady income that way.
The union would have not only steady income, but we had everybody be a unionized worker whether he wanted to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also had a bad side to it.
Mm-hmm.
The negative side was, once everybody was in the union didn't have to do that much, didn't have to be militant no more.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? To keep the dues coming.
Right.
They're going to get the dues whether you do anything or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it had its positive and its negative advantage.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So what I'm saying is that my early experience was in the union.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got my early organizing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Was in strikes, wildcats, picketing, goon squad, stuff like that.
Did you, when you were in the goon squad, you're kind of small to be a goon.
Huh?
You must have been pretty tough.
No, smaller guys than me was goon.
Really?
And there were smaller women. One of the best fighters I know, a little woman named Corrine Smith. She was smaller than you.
Uh-huh.
Fighting like a tomcat out there. you had a whole different side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did you think when you were in the goon squad? You probably think differently about it Would you be in the goon squad again if
you
went back?
Sure.
Would you?
Yeah. Well, see, with the blacks, when the black moon come along, they didn't have stuff like that because you didn't have a captive audience. See, workers are a captive audience.
Mm-hmm.
They work here in this plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can either stay, if you don't join the union, goddammit, you ain't get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, in the black moon, you couldn't say that, right?
Yeah.
You don't join
right.
the NACP
right.
or you don't join the organization.
Right.
So all we could do is call them up at Tom's.
Mm-hmm.
And the union we call you scab,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And scab was a bad name. Nobody wanted to be called scab,
mm-hmm.
okay? Scabbing, working on, you know. But now it's got to know the scabbing everywhere now. Folks do it all the way better way.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, somebody going to try to break the line and send the goons out there. Oh, they'd have a march on the plant, trying to send the goons out there and beat the hell out of them and rout them, okay? And that's where it went. But they gave him a name.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you could do.
Mm-hmm.
You said, oh, they just Tom and they, it's all tracks the same
mm-hmm.
thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
One was that you
mm-hmm.
being me. The other one was that you didn't want to help do nothing in the struggle, but you didn't think
mm-hmm.
or not. We
mm-hmm.
call them up Tom. So that's
mm-hmm.
what that thing do,
yeah.
okay?
Okay.
So that, I say, was where I labor movement. And I just lost that stuff transcend over into the black
mm-hmm.
movement and black movement. Our employment practice committee,
mm-hmm.
which we had at all in the news. The purpose of that committee was to break up discrimination in and around the plant, the common. Not so much to hide, but at that time everybody get hired.
Mm-hmm.
But putting all black people in one particular classification
mm-hmm.
or in one particular
mm-hmm.
okay? Well, but it was always based on seniority, and we didn't leave the plant 4 years. I should be able to go into skilled trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the fair employment practice and also the insight.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that started in 1940. On a Friday night downtown, though, and picked all the restaurants down, different restaurants
mm-hmm.
downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Arnie Dillard. His wife just died since
mm-hmm.
she was away. He was in the SWP. And I was in there too. But I think I was out of there at that time.
ASWP is again.
So he worked at Cadillac,
mm-hmm.
Cleveland. Okay. And so the Chrysler Local Fair Price Committee and the Cadillac Fair Price Committee used to function together.
Mm-hmm.
But we did that out of the NACP. Meet downtown the NACP on Lytton Street
mm-hmm.
at the YWCA, that's what it is, whatever it is. And so then we carried on struggle both from the NACP in relationship to what was going on in the plant and what was going on in the streets
mm-hmm.
too. And so we broadened the Fair Price Committee to work both inside of the plant and
mm-hmm.
outside of the plant. And outside the plant, we were working more with the NACP.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the plant, we
mm-hmm.
were working just at the Fair Practice Committee.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
So when did you start going to the restaurants?
That was in the 40s.
It was in the 40s?
Mm-hmm. 46, 47, 48, 49, 50. We had Fair Practice Committee was very active.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go up and down, we would have you to different bars, and they'd tell us, we don't serve black folks. So we fair out a case under Deeds Act.
Mm-hmm.
Deeds Act was there should be no discrimination in Michigan on land, sea, air,
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No kind of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go in and tell them we file a complaint. They say, what you complaining about? Well, if they don't want you over here, why don't you go on over and hasten? The man said, I don't want to serve you. He said, yeah, but the law says he has to serve. So once I have an argument with them, we go down to 1300 Bogan that Monday and file
mm-hmm.
up the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
It was served. And then we would have to send back a team that had seen that did serve. We keep people didn't want us in there because even people, the customer in the whole ordinary say, we're going home, get our gun and run these niggas out of here. Okay, but we still stay. It's up and down Woodward Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke up all the bars and the eating places from downtown all the way up to Grand Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went all up as far as Claremont.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were lots of white restaurants up on Hoover that those days that wouldn't serve blacks. Okay? Mm-hmm. And we would go in and ask for it to be served, and they would refuse us. Or some place we'd go in there, like we went to the Hotel of Charter, they wouldn't disagree with not serve, but they put salt in our food. Mm-hmm. So we called the manager, we say it's full of salt. He said, I know it tastes like no salt to me. He know they put salt in. And a lot of times we'd go in and get something, they'd deliver to break the glasses up in front of us and let us know they wasn't going to eat out of something niggas ate out. But all of this took place on the Fair Employment Practice Committee, working with the NAACP, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, and this went on throughout the union, okay? Mm-hmm. The Gordy murder trial here in Detroit. That's where the cops went up one Sunday, come at the house, their father come out with his Winchester and shot two cops. Trial here in Detroit called the Gordy murder case.
The Gordy?
Gordy, G-O-R-D-I-E, Gordy murder trial. Mm-hmm. Gave Gordy some time, but we say he did it in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Several different cases, big cases here in Detroit that had something to do with the city. That was very active from 4 to 6. And then in the 50, you know, you had the stuff began to happen down south. The MTUAW members began to kind of transfer their interest. None of us would have ever thought it would have got to that point in them days.
Mm-hmm.
And all was happening then with more black folks from even the south coming up north.
Mm-hmm.
Though up north is just segregated the war down south.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would happen to them,
mm-hmm.
okay? But in the meantime, what the police force had a lot of southern communities beat the hell out of folks. Lots of them put them in jail and turn them out on Monday morning. All down. But nevertheless, I would say Friday that remained.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the air, out of the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Up to then, every blacks was confined to the east side,
mm-hmm.
and a few on the lower west side. All in the Grand Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
After the rebellion, people began to move outside, around Linwood, Claremont, and all in that moving. That black people moved in because the Jewish ones were moving. FHA made it possible for lots of poor whites to get a house. Down and moved into a new house, FHA house. Blacks couldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all these things made tension in there. Tier thing come. There was already up north. Down south, the tension was so many of the soldiers from the south, black. So down south, these boys was coming back from the army, and the first when they started coming home from south, there was lots of incidents down south.
Mm-hmm.
But see, down south is all carried going, just like they were police.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The struggle happened in the south. Then at that period, the Ku Klux Klan had started bombing, moving in neighborhoods pretty close to white neighborhoods. Even though down south, blacks and whites had lived like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, black street and white street.
Mm-hmm.
And then lots of blacks who also worked for those white people,
mm-hmm.
so it was a real relationship. They had also a place in for black folks. So there was tensions in the south,
mm-hmm.
and there was tension up north. The young blacks, as they come back from the army, were not going back to the old way.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks moving into neighborhoods which hitherto had been all white. Okay, better jobs than they had, and the inability for them, and things like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Hudson traveled blacks, they were employing no dark-skinned blacks, and they only employed them as well. Now, so was active in the civil rights movement, whether they in the plant or in the Dresky and supported folks in the South. We did it called itself in support. So we had lots of strikes downtown.
Mm-hmm.
We were going different big rough national chains down south to the left blacks in, so we picked them up here, okay? Okay. To go down south, to support the folks down south. So now the movement began to shift. In 63, which come after the Birmingham, killing of the four little girls in Birmingham. Most of them who had been up here quite a while kept saying, I wouldn't live down there. I would take that down there, all right? So that was lots of sentiment. The sentiment nothing here about what was happening here. And only after 1963, then the movement became both a North and a South movement. The movement didn't come until after Fulham Good was bombed in Birmingham.
What year was that?
63, that country.
Did you take part?
Oh, sure, I was North. Well, see, at that time, UAW was very much involved in the state anyway, bigger than the one in Washington. They didn't say that, but we knew we had over 300,000 people.
Were you from the union?
Well,
the
I was, union? No, I, that day, I just with, I think, families of people, our friends were together. But it was clear cut. See, the union folks didn't go with the union, they just went with their own families.
Yeah.
So they blocked them. Because, see, what had happened, well, with Clegg, they lost the organizing, okay?
Now
all the churches were agreed, that's what got out so many people. So in the day that they had it, from to downtown, from Woodward over to Brush, now all these people wasn't black now, lots of whites were there too now.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
sure.
Okay,
yeah.
But came from the suburbs and joined them. So it was a tremendous, but people was all, it was lack of a where Luther spoke and where Cain spoke, but none of us could get near them. The people who marched up there with them actually got in at that time. I don't think that whole up down the street, all the Jefferson and all the streets up there, listened to the old loudspeaker. All right? But that's what it is.
Well, I think we'll stop for now. I think you told me what I need, want to know.
You got what you want to know? Yeah. Sure.
Well, I can talk.
Even before the black movement started and being in the labor movement, I think it's coming from out of the South. People ought to relate to each other better than what they were doing. And a sense of believing in fair play. And so I was spurred on lots of time when I didn't want to do something I did. Okay? And the cause got I was always and so I didn't get limited by well hell all I have to do is take care of Jim I was and I was not gonna change the world by myself. And I'll try to give some leadership to her or to feel aware of torn against each other. I think by being in the labor movement, you guys, I learned a deep sense of what I would call at that time class struggle. It wasn't just because the black need to struggle, black and white need to struggle. This need for solidarity to be across the board. That did always work that way. All the different ethnic groups should struggle together. That I think motivated me to try to always broaden the horizon.
When did you meet Grace? Did you meet her
in
one of these groups?
50s. 50s. Okay. See what happened after the war was over. Lots of groups from New York. Prior to the war, they had been active in the early and everything kind of got gobbled up. And then the great organization, next great organization, took the world, they were going to organize unorganized all over the country. It didn't happen, but that's what the idea was. We were in the organizing people. People from the garment workers, and all over there, and they come in and brought their skills to okay, and help organize. So, in New York, okay? And then we was in the same organization, which was that, and Raya Donetsky, okay? Secretary for Trotsky, okay? C.L.R. Jane that came from Trinidad. And so C.L.R. Jane was the leader of our organization. Raya Donetsky's party name was and then C.L.R. Jane's name was Johnson. And so it was out of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right. That's where Grace and I come together, in a political organization.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to.